It's Tuesday morning, and it's Curse of Politics, featuring Scott Reed, Jenny Byrne, and for the campaign, Nick Taylor Vasey. Hello, Nick. How are you this morning?
Good, David. How are you doing?
Excellent. Where do we find you today?
I am at the Comfort Inn Hamilton for the last time. It's a classy spot. I'd rather be nowhere else in this town. People stay downtown, but I go to the East End because that's where the fun is.
You're not on a campaign, Nick. You're just hiding out from your family. You're on the lam because there's no campaign in Hamilton. You're just making this up.
I'm just wandering the country. Yeah, that's true.
Hey, Nick, just avoiding my life. What's Politico excited about in the campaign today? What's Politico got going on in terms of reporting?
You know what's cool? So we're watching where leaders are going. Of course, we're not really following them, but we're watching where they're going. For the purposes of a newsletter that we write that we hope everybody loves to read, and they all love where the leaders are going. So we watch. And today's I think a pretty important day. So Jagmeet Singh flew to British Columbia. So he's the first leader out there for the campaign, and he's in Coquitlam to start his day. And Coquitlam is part of a riding called Port Moody Coquitlam, which was the tightest riding in the 2019 election. So he's not wasting any time going out to a place where the NDP is competitive. It was a three-way race, and the NDP really wants that one. So he's out there. And then Erin O'Toole is heading finally out of his chamber in the west in Ottawa, and he's venturing as far as the greater Toronto area. So he's starting downtown, and then at the end of the day, he's up in Richmond Hill, and Richmond Hill in the last election was the second closest. And he's actually owned the same venue that Andrew Scheer visited in the last couple of days of the 2019 campaign. That was a really, really close fight between a Liberal and a Conservative, so they want that one back. So that's where he is. And then Justin Trudeau, he's also out, he's out and about, he's not going to any particularly close ridings, but he is going to Markham. And right now the Liberals have a Markham riding, but they don't have the other Markham riding. So Mary Ng is one of the MPs, but Bob Saroya is another, and he is a Conservative, one of the rare blue spots in the GTA. So Trudeau wants that back. So they're all going to swing ridings, which is pretty exciting.
It does. It does. And anybody have a big announcement today?
They have things that are pegged as announcements, but we don't know what those announcements will be. So we'll stay tuned.
We'll stay tuned. All right, Nick, thank you very much for this morning. Where do people find this Politico reporting?
Well, at Politico.com. And if you follow us on Twitter at Politico Ottawa, then you'll find everything that we do. We link to all of our stories. Some of them are behind a paywall, but hopefully people subscribe.
Hey, the newsletter that's not behind a paywall is called Ottawa Playbook.
Yeah, that's our brand new newsletter we launched for the campaign. Yeah, it's free.
Yep.
Anyone can read it. You can sign up without paying a cent.
Nick, you're a goddamn trooper for being here with us. And Nick is one of Scott Reed's favorite names, by the way.
It is. Oh, it
great.
Is.
Great. Yeah. Great. Happy to hear.
Well, the man who ran the swing bridge where I grew up, his name was Nick, and he was kind and let us play with the motors. So I have fond memories.
All right.
Get out of that Comfort Inn.
Get out of that Comfort Inn. And although you'll miss the waffle iron in the morning, I think.
Yeah, I got to go check out. Tomorrow I'll be talking to you from a Delta hotel, so I'm really stepping it up.
Oh, boy. Make sure you get the strippers and blow out of the room before the show starts.
Oh. All right, kids, I've got data.
Woo, let's hear it.
Got data. Let me just explain to people what I mean here by daily tracking that Frank Graves is doing. So he's polling every night 250 cases, and he's compiling a three-day roll-up of those interviews. So every day he drops the oldest day and adds a new day. That's how the tracking adjusts over time. Let's see what we've got today. We've got Liberals, 34. Conservatives, 29. New Democrats, 20. Greens, 6. Let me break that down for you in two interesting ways. First of all, in age. Under 35, 30% NDP, 28 liberal, 23 conservative. 35 to 49, 34 conservative, 30 liberal, 21 NDP. 50 to 64, 41% liberal, 29% conservative, 15% NDP. And 65 plus, 38 liberal, 33 conservative, 14 NDP. And now gender. Among men, 37 conservative, 29 liberal, 19 NDP. Among women, 40 liberal, 22 conservative, 22 NDP. Got a reaction?
Well, the thing that jumps out at me, I guess, is kind of the 50 to 64 and the 65 plus, so the 50 and above. That's usually a demographic that the Conservative Party has pretty much owned. They did for the vast majority of the time that I worked for Prime Minister Harper, the time in opposition even and leaning into and while we were in government, as well as the Ford campaign from 2018. So that's I'd say out of everything there, that kind of jumped out at me the most of being interesting.
For sure. The Conservatives have lost the seniors vote and the older middle-aged vote. And that's pretty fascinating. That's a big change. And I think, I'm guessing that has a lot to do with the pandemic. I just think during the pandemic that people in that cohort have felt vulnerable. They're anxious about their jobs, they're anxious about their prospects. And I honestly think that CERB and rent subsidies, I think those sorts of instruments have made those people feel as secure as they can in any government. So they're really responding to that.
But I disagree with that. We're talking about the boomers. They're not the ones that, for the most part, are collecting CERB. They're the ones that out of every demographic we have, the boomers are the most, for the most part, not everyone, but the boomers are very financially secure. So these aren't people the 50 to 60, the 50 and over, for the most part, not everyone. They're not the ones on CERB. They own their homes. They bought them 30 years ago when they 30, 40 years ago when they first got married. So I think that that makes it even more of a an interesting dynamic.
But they may not be collecting it, but I think they overwhelmingly approve of it. I think they are boomers with all the advantages that they've had, and they're watching their kids and they're thinking, well, you know, others are vulnerable, and so they're responding positively to the policy instrument. I think we underestimate, by the way, how powerful a policy and political event CERB has been. It gets more complicated going forward. You saw yesterday that Trudeau said he's going to extend the hiring program. But I think the CERB has been, for all its warts, and when you were going to rush that much money out that quickly, I think it's been a huge political success as a matter of public policy. Maybe incomparable to anything we've seen in 30 or 40 or 50 years.
I think it was at the start of the pandemic, and I know we don't want to stay fully on this, but I haven't gotten out to the doors. I'm going to start this this week getting out to some doors myself. But I've been talking to people that have been knocking on doors, some candidates who've been knocking on doors here in the GTA for months now, and they said they've seen a tremendous change of tone in the doors towards CERB. Everyone's been affected by someone, you know, their cousin owns a restaurant and can't get enough people to work for them because their former staff is just, they'd rather, you know, get the free money and not have to work. So I think it was a tremendous success politically at the start of the pandemic. I think we're increasingly seeing it to be less of a political issue that people are happy about.
Which is why he more extended divisive. The recovery benefit,
less unanimity,
hiring,
more
not,
divisive.
Not the CERB.
Yeah. Okay, election 44 is on. The campaigns have kicked off. You've heard the opening speeches. Judge the initial ads, and maybe, just maybe, you're casting a skeptical side eye on some early campaign commitments. Because there's promises, and then there's following through on those promises. Our presenting sponsor, TELUS, doesn't just talk the talk that good business and doing good are inextricably linked. They make it so. They're connecting for good portfolio of programs. There's four of them. Create meaningful change by bridging digital divides and ensuring Canadians in need get access to TELUS's world-leading technology. TELUS Internet for Good provides 200,000 low-income families in BC, Alberta, and Quebec high-speed broadband internet for only $9.95 a month. TELUS Mobility for Good gives 20,000 youth transitioning from foster care a free smartphone and fully subsidized 3-gigabyte data plan for 2 years. TELUS Tech for Good helps differently abled Canadians facing challenges using smartphones and tablets with customized tech solutions that help them live more independently. And TELUS Health for Good provides mobile health clinics to bring primary care to people in need living on the streets in urban centers across Canada. And on top of that, there's the $1.3 billion in time, value, and financial support that the TELUS team has contributed since the year 2000, all of which adds up to TELUS being the most giving company in the world. You can find out more about it all at telus.com/connectingcanada. So let's start with what was obviously the big news of yesterday, which was O'Toole's platform announcement. And who wants to start?
Well, I feel I was kind of actually, I was only joking when I said that it looked like a Scientology indoctrination center, but yesterday it kind of actually did. The vision of Aaron standing in the middle holding a magazine that has himself on the cover with two giant pictures of himself behind him actually made it look like that. I thought the cover was the reaction on social media was kind of funny. I feel that he looks like he's about to go do a shift as a bouncer at a gay bar, like happy hour at Woody's here in Toronto. So, it's different than any platform that we kind of had with Prime Minister Harper. It was 160 pages, seemed to be like 8-point font. I know when I was reading it, I was like this far away from my computer. So it's going to be interesting. It was as clean a launch for a platform. Take away policy aside. It was about as clean as launch as possible for a platform. He didn't step on his own dick, for lack of a better term, from what we've used before. But I think there was twofold for that. One, Afghanistan was still dominating the news cycle yesterday for the most part. And two, because it was 160 pages and so such a fulsome document, the media and the opposition, I think that it's probably taken them longer than normal would be to do a complete deep dive on it.
What's the positive wedge in there? What's the thing that is going to change the dynamic of this election campaign that's in there? I didn't see anything.
Are you asking me?
Anybody. Sure. I'm just venting. I'm just spouting.
Well, I don't see any. What it's lacking is an anchor policy or anchor policies. It's completely separate from different than like the Stand Up for Canada platform, the Harper campaign of 2006, where we had the five priorities. There's themes, there's thematics within the platform, but there's nothing really anchor. There's no choice in childcare. There's no GST. There's no, you know, the first piece of legislation is going to be the Accountability Act. There's nothing that really they can point to. There's things that I think are going to be universally popular. I think that the foreign home ownership stuff, people are going to like that. It's politically been where some provincial governments have gone. I think that there's the job surge, the 50% paying the 50% of wages for new hires for businesses. I think, you know, kind of niche issues like the adoption tax credit, increasing it from 15 to $20,000 in terms of a tax credit, and then some different things on hydrogen and SMRs. But for the most part, there is nothing like that can be the signature item for the platform. So this is what's going to be interesting. He's kind of they've shot their wad. They've got everything out now, and it's going to be very difficult, I think, for the Conservative campaign to now fill 34 days in terms of having a concise message that they're not that is actually going to drive the media.
So
yeah, Scott, it felt to me like they were running off tackle rather than throwing the ball down the field.
Yeah, and there were a handful of things I liked about it, and a handful of things that I didn't like or didn't understand about it. And I'll start just for the sake of being kind. I'll start with the things that I did like about it. I did like that they presented the plan early so that the narrative, I think it seems to me, and this becomes a bit contradictory, but the notion that they'll start off with, look, we have a responsible, comprehensive, thought through plan. I like that as general dynamic. Then they can use it as a reference point. I think about, I know this is the lame reference point that everyone makes, but I think about the 93 Red Book. I think that in some ways they're trying to use it the same, like to sort of say, look, we are substantive. Maybe all you've heard about conservatives is fighting and arguments and wedge issues over the last number of years and all that. But no, like we have a substantive plan, and it is substantive and meaty. So I thought that made sense. I thought it made sense to do it early. And I know you take some risk when you do that because of what Jenny's saying. You know, will reporters become bored with reporting something that was on page 117 on day 17? It's new to people at home, but it may not be new to the media. And maybe they say, well, you know, you got to feed me fresh meat or I'm not covering you as enthusiastically. So that's always a tactical issue. But there were things that I didn't understand about it. So first of all, I didn't understand the absence of what you guys are calling an anchor policy. Like if you think about the coverage that emerged from their platform yesterday, it's just about the fact that it exists. It isn't, there isn't, you go, and it's topped by this rallying policy proposal that distinguishes it from the other parties. It tells you in minuscule what O'Toole will do in macro for the country, what he's all about, what the conservatives are all about. And I was surprised by that. The coverage was, you know, stuff like, well, they'll undo the child care plan by going back to just basically a fiscal transfer to families and that sort of stuff. So they didn't have their own defining policy, so I thought that was odd. And I'm not where Jenny is. I think they did step on their own tick. I thought they stepped on their, I just, and we've talked about this before.
Well, that's certainly what O'Toole would like you to believe is possible based on that picture.
I don't understand the cover. I don't, and I know we're all joking about it and people are like, oh, you're just being a superficial goof. I don't get it. What is this guy's obsession with his physical presentation? It's like, please buy, Bang a Bald Man Monthly. Like, it's just the strangest thing. And
he's either unjustifiably vain or deeply insecure about his appearance versus Trudeau, one of the two.
Well, those things can both be true at the same time. I mean, he says about his platform, oh, the photo, my wife likes it. Yeah, I think his wife's husband likes it, right? Like, it just seems like, why do you keep doing this? The pictures of himself running, the tight t-shirt, the come hither look. And look, I know we're not supposed to talk about people's appearances and that's verb, but he's putting it on the table. And so I'm just going to say it because it's been bugging me for months, right? And if he's going to, strap on the tight t-shirt and try to look like, he's a bald Lee Majors. Well, I'm just going to say it then. He looks like a grown-up Charlie Brown. Okay, he looks like Charlie Brown, a 50-year-old Charlie Brown. Why is he trying to draw this comparison in this competition of matinee looks with Trudeau? He's not going to win. We've talked about it before. And it just reeks of insecurity to me. And I don't get it. Sitting in there, hey, get a load of me. And, divorcees, line up to the left, please. It's just... I think it's deeply distracting and strange. So I do think they stepped on their own dick with that bizarre cover. And I would have included an anchor policy and a boring cover. That's what I would have done if I were them. And I think they gave themselves a substantive document, but I'm not sure they gave themselves a killer political document. And I thought that their presentation of it was fucking strange. He's got to get off of the Aaron O'Toole drug. I mean, where are we going to be by the debates? He's going to show up topless. The guy, someone, intervene and stop it now.
We've talked about it before. No one's going to out Trudeau. Trudeau is he is the unicorn politician in terms of how he looks. So I agree. It was a very bizarrely leader-centric platform. I agree with you, Scott. I would have gone kind of down the vein of the Common Sense Revolution or the Red Book, like just a big blue cover of what have you. I think he also leaves himself vulnerable to things that I think eventually people are going to people are going to get to. I think that it seems extremely high spending. I think that it's going to be very hard for them to explain how they're actually going to balance the budget in 10 years based on the astronomical amount of spending, like $60 billion, I think, in healthcare transfers alone to the provinces. And I think he's left himself vulnerable. We'll see if the Maverick Party and PPC kind of jump on it. There's things. There was a large section on Quebec and increasing the power to Quebec for immigration tax collection. You know, more power to the Official Languages Commission. You know, in the Quebec section, there was, increasing French immigration outside of Quebec, where they talked about. So, and things like a Netflix tax, a 3% tax to streaming services from outside of Canada. So that's essentially a Netflix tax, because if you're going to, we know how it goes. If you're going to tax the company, it gets right down to the to the user. So I think that there's some stuff in there that if the opposition parties once they get their kind of head wrapped around it, the opposition parties that may be hitting Aaron from the right are going to go on kind of a high spending tax increases in the platform, as well as special more special powers for Quebec that other provinces don't have.
So I have an observation and then a question for you. My observation is, by the way, that I think that the childcare thing might be clever politically. If it tempts the liberals into thinking that is the vulnerability of the conservatives,
I really agree.
And attacking them and focusing their attack on their decision to cancel the childcare program. Because as I've been saying, I suspect that many, many fewer people care about that than the liberals hope is the case. It's hot. This has been a ferocious summer, particularly out west. None of us has ever seen weather like this in Canada. In June, southern British Columbia experienced a high of just about 50 degrees Celsius. That's the average maximum summer temperature in the sand desert of Saudi Arabia, an area so pitiless it's called the Empty Quarter. The thing is, southern BC is not empty. It's filled with communities and First Nations through which our sponsor, CN Rail, operates trains all year long. The safety of those communities is CN's greatest priority. So it makes sense to have plans to prevent fire, particularly during periods of extreme weather. To begin with, CN tracks are filled with sensors and detectors that constantly scan cars and locomotives for hazards like overheated wheels, hot bearings, or dragging equipment. And CN's train and maintenance crews are effectively trained as first responders. They're not professional firefighters, but they have basic firefighting equipment and are instructed to remain at the scene of any fire they spot, containing it if they can until the professionals arrive. CN also maintains firefighting trailers at strategic points along its network, where heavier gear like pumps, hoses, and bladders are stored. During extreme weather, CN adjusts the speed of its trains. Locomotives are placed where the cabooses used to be to enable forward monitoring. Extra patrols precede and follow trains, looking for any signs of fire crews may have missed. Steps are taken to remove any loose brush or debris on right-of-ways. And of course, mechanical inspections are intensified to ensure no locomotive is emitting sparks. CN's drive to be North America's safest railway continues. My question is, going back to the fun we were having with the O'Toole launch, there is a strategic decision there that I'm interested in, and that is to focus on him personally. So to go back to your 1993 Red Book example, Scott, it was designed to provide Mr. Chrétien with a buttressing field of credibility, as was Team. So Chrétien wasn't on the cover of the 93 Red Book. Chrétien didn't solely on stage in a messianic way present that platform. And he always accompanied it by Team. And I'm wondering why O'Toole wants to run head-to-head against Trudeau rather than running Brand and Team against Trudeau.
Can I take a crack at that first? Because, Jenny, you'll have a more thoughtful insight because you come from the tribe. But my generic impression is twofold. First, I just want to say, I want to just hit one more beat on the childcare point. I couldn't agree with you more. I saw the liberal response to it, and I thought to myself, okay, you're obligated to call them out on it. Don't try to campaign on it. I'm a person that strongly supports childcare. I want institutional childcare. I want the spaces created. I want that kind of model. But I'm not so foolish as to believe that this is something you want the campaign to be about. So I really agree with you, and I hope they make their mark and then move on. But on your question, there's a difference with Mr. Chrétien and O'Toole, and that is that Mr. Chrétien's deficiency was whether or not he was substantive and serious. And so he was a well-known political commodity. He was established. People understood what he was and who he was, and he needed the ballast of the plan and the team. I think in O'Toole's case, his team could be making the judgment. No one knows who this guy is. And ultimately, in our day and age, no one's going to pick somebody to be prime minister unless they knew who that person is. They have to have a sense of comfort and feel for it. So we've got no choice but to present this guy. My objection, I don't know if that's right, by the way. I would still put him with team in particular. But my objection isn't so much that they make that judgment. It's the way in which they introduce him. Like, I don't know anything about his values. I haven't really heard something about where he stands up. I haven't seen the Man from Hope video, you know, that they used to define Bill Clinton in 1992. I just see these weird photographs of him trying to present himself as a, you know, as a smoke show. And I find it bizarre and inauthentic because he's not that good looking. So quit telling me that, holy fuck, like people whistle when he walks by. They don't. Knock it off. Tell me something about him that I admire. Tell me something that I would go, oh, wow, I would really dig that. But I think maybe that explains the dissonance.
Yeah, so I agree. So I think it was less about, I think that you guys benefited less from the team approach that you kind of went on with Chrétien. It was more the Liberal brand was so high. I've said this many times. The Liberal Party of Canada's brand is one of the strongest, if not strongest, in the Western world. And so in the 2004 and 2005 elections, the Conservative Party of Canada polled higher than Stephen Harper's name, which is why the focus was more party-centric. You guys were the opposite. Everything that I remember of communications or that you did, it was based on Paul Martin. It was based on Prime Minister Martin because he pulled higher at that point than the Liberal Party. And so leaders may not like to have it, but campaigns have to make tough decisions. And in this case, the Conservative Party of Canada is infinitely more popular right now than Erin O'Toole's personal brand. So regardless of people getting to know him, what have you, I would be focusing on the Conservative Party of Canada versus Justin Trudeau at this point, or the Liberal Party. I think that they're fundamentally making a mistake by turning this into Justin Trudeau versus Erin O'Toole. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. There's nothing. It was evident in the last couple of months they were never going down that direction because we've talked about this before. It was evident that they were going down a leader to leader kind of ballot. But I think it might prove to be a mistake for them.
Well, it's particularly a mistake if the proof point of that comparison is show me your abs. Like, they just have got to get off this. I know I've repeated myself 100 times, but fuck, it's just bizarro. I have a question for you, Jenny. Send around another magazine cover or a magazine / platform cover to us just to David and I the other day. And I thought it was intriguing. So I just want to ask, I hope that's okay. But big, thick platform, not particularly small C conservative in its orientation in that it's got a lot of spending and that sort of stuff. And that magazine cover with a big smiling picture of the leader. It's a lot like what Patrick Brown did in his aborted leadership once before he got dumped by his own party. That's where his platform was. And there's some team members around O'Toole that are of that Patrick Brown ilk. Do you think they're just replaying that
ilk
set of cards?
Ilk.
Did I say ilk?
Ilk.
What did it?
Ilk.
Ilk.
You said ilk. Ilk.
Milk. Of that milk. Of that. Of that heavy, heavy, creamy milk that Patrick Brown left when he departed. I'm wondering if, I don't know what that analogy was supposed to imply, by the way, and I just want to bail out of any accountability for it.
We were just letting it slide.
Yeah, I couldn't.
You can't bet 1,000.
Goodness, no. Is that what's going on? Like, is it less strategic than we think? Are they just going, well, we finally get to run the play that we had called 3 years ago?
Yeah, there's a lot of people. It's funny. I had a number of people based out of Ontario because the conservatives, like, there's an overlap, obviously, of board members and membership and what have you that that reached out and said this looks very identical to Patrick Brown's playbook platform, and people have been making that assertion since April when Aaron launched his version of the carbon tax, because right. of course that's something that Patrick Brown did in February of 2016 at the policy convention in Ottawa, and some will say was kind of the beginning of the end of his leadership. It just kind of went down from there. So there has been a lot of speculation among Ontario Conservatives that this is the Patrick Brown campaign that never was in terms of certain policies.
That's interesting to me. I don't know why it's interesting and what it means, but it's interesting.
All right. Time for the Daily Curse before we wrap up. Daily Curse is when we shout out at anything that we noticed yesterday in the campaign or at something that's going on in the campaign that we feel we've got a comment on. I'll start. I don't like the beginning of the Liberal campaign either. We've spent the whole show talking about the Conservative campaign. I don't like the beginning of the Liberal campaign. Partly it's the fault of Afghanistan overshadowing everything, but I don't really sense the clear sense of purpose that I think they need to break through the cynicism about this campaign call. I don't get the sense of purpose, and I don't, in their advertising, I don't hear any message. It's vague at the level of generality that is likely to be meaningless to people. So I think the Liberal campaign is starting as a floating campaign, needed to be more energetic and pointed than that. It's my worry.
I'll go second because I have the same curse, and I just want to echo all of that. And we talked in the run-up to the campaign. I was harping about the need for specificity. Like, I really felt that in order to confront the cynicism, which, by the way, there's at least as much, if not more of it, about this election call and about it, the motivation behind this election call than I expected. I'm running into it as I bump into people, like a heavy dose of it.
Focus group I did on Through the Looking Glass was very revealing on this point.
Very sobering. People have a view that this is all about securing a majority, and they don't look upon that benignly. They think that that is a contradiction to everything that took Trudeau to 40% in the polls, because what took him there was that he put public health ahead of politics. Now it appears as though he's putting politics ahead of public health, and they don't like it. I think the convergence of the Delta variant with the call is unhelpful, that he's got to be specific. And he's got to say, these are the things you get if you vote Liberal and why it's necessary. Don't talk about a majority, but say, like, this is what I need a clear, screaming endorsement from Canadians on so that I can power these policies through and look down the barrel at other people who are disagreeing with and say, sorry, I've got the public behind me. And I haven't seen that specificity. He played the vaccination card well on day one, but beyond that, I think it is a pure brand get a load of Trudeau campaign. And I think, you know, they're really asking for trouble. Sorry, Jenny.
Jeez, there's 34 days left, guys.
They got to sharpen up.
You guys, you take things so personally. My curse is not really a curse. It is a curse. I think that Trudeau did handle the vaccine issue from a Liberal point of view on day one. They obviously somewhat... was strange yesterday, because of course yesterday he basically mirrored.
Got all mucked up yesterday.
It got mucked up yesterday. He's in terms of the public service, in terms of saying that if public servants didn't get vaccinated, they'd have to do daily rapid tests, which was mirrored what Aaron said in his clarification from Sunday night and then yesterday. And then of course the public service through the Treasury Board Secretariat put out a directive that for public servants that were not vaccinated, there would be accommodations made for test rapid testing, and which was then pulled from the
PMO
website. Either the public service did this on their own based on what Trudeau said. Maybe the senior person that stayed back at the PMO, we always have, you know, one person that's kind of back there, made an executive decision and approved it and got it out there, and then got like an angry campaign from the bus going, what the ever loving fuck did you just put out? But what I think it shows is that regardless of kind of what happened to that, is the Trudeau campaign is not done with vaccines. They still see this as a way that they can go after the Conservatives, because of course the Conservatives, unlike the NDP and the Liberals, have said that all of their candidates have to be vaccinated. So my guess is where we're going on this now is that they're going to continue this. We're going to see more and more questions, especially as Aaron is out and about and going to have candidates standing behind him, or candidates on stage with him. Excuse me, are you Bob Smith vaccinated? Is this candidate vaccinated? And I think that that's where we're going to end up seeing where the Liberals will probably want to take it.
I think you're right. I think that's for sure. I think it's going to dog him. And that's why, as tough a choice as it would have been for him, I think O'Toole would have given himself a much cleaner first week if he defused that bomb prior to the writ and just said, guys, we got to take this issue off the table. I don't want it dogging me for 5, 6, 7, 8 days. Right now, it's, as David and I were saying, and maybe you don't hold the same reservations, Jenny, that we do, but as David and I were just saying, if you feel that the Liberal campaign is a little cotton candy-ish, a little soft so far, vaccinations is the one sharp edge that they've got. And so you can bet they're going to keep coming back to it.
All right, guys. Well, that's it for today. And sorry for my wonky internet. Really bad today up here at the cottage. But I guess like tracking polls, there'll be the odd bad one throughout the course of the campaign. Anyway, great talking with you today. I want to thank, obviously, both of you. I want to thank everybody for listening and watching. Our sponsors, our presenting sponsor, TELUS, and our sponsor, CN Rail, Politico, and Nick Taylor Vasey for being here again today. And, of course, our great friends at Ecos and Frank Graves for providing us with the tracking polling. I'm loving this tradition of talking to you guys first thing in the morning about the campaign.
And we should just tomorrow. We should do a sleepover, and that way we can just all get up together and record.
That actually sounds fun. All right, see you tomorrow.
Bye, guys.
Bye.